Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the secret societies when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, your government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. Everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects us in our person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect us from ourselves. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and very logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is being gathered, what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. And best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Just call and ask for that free general law CD package. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, last time we were talking about the Rockefellers, the UN, the Nazis, the eugenics, the Masons in this New World Order program, and it led us into a fellow guy by the name of Cecil Rhodes, who gives out things like Rhodes scholarships to people like Bill Clinton. Now, what we're dealing with in the world today, all of us, you and I and the gatepost and everybody else, are the net sum total products of our education. You and I know everything that we know because it came into our minds by our five senses. You had to hear it, taste it, touch it, smell it, or feel it, or you couldn't know it. Now, the guy that controls what we hear, taste, touch, smell, and feel is the guy that controls us. Now, in sales, you know, when we send a student over to sales school and we want to teach this guy how to sell people something. You know, I'm a businessman, and I want to sell my schools. I want to sell my property. I want to sell my houses. I want to sell my services. You know, I'm Roto-Rooter, whatever it is. I need salesmen to do that. And so we train salesmen in sales schools. And so we observe human beings, and we call this psychology. And as we observe them, we pay attention to, well, why is it that these people buy Chevrolet automobiles rather than a Lexus? Or why does this guy want to go to Disneyland instead of going to some other beach or some other resort destination? Why does he want to go to Six Flags rather than Silver Dollar City? And then we catalog that. We write books about it. And we train these people. We call them psychologists, and we call them teachers and sales schools and one thing or another. And we watch all you people out there, and we monitor you, and we know what motivates you, and we know what your buying signals are. And so we have discovered that human beings are motivated by five motivators. Did you know that? Five motivators. Write these down. You'll love this. God, you'll love it. If I want you to buy my Chevrolet automobile, I have to appeal to you and to one of these five motivators. And you're going to respond to my motivation. I'm going to jerk your string, and you're going to dance to my tune because I'm going to motivate you. And here's what they are. Number one is vanity. You are motivated by vanity. You are a vain person. Vain, vanity, puffed up, self-absorbed, really concerned about me. This is why my face is such a success. You just can't wait to get out there and tell everybody about you. All right, vanity, that's number one. Jealousy is number two. It's a very potent motivator of human nature. You are jealous of other people around you. They have things. They do things. They have abilities and skills that you want, you desire, you covet, you lust after, but you can't have, and you're jealous of them. Sometimes people kill people out of jealousy. Okay? So vanity and jealousy. Two. Now, lust, number three, and greed, number four. And the two are exclusive, but they're similar in that lust is a desire to have that which you are not entitled to. You lust after your neighbor's wife, not because you can't have a wife, it's because you can't have that wife. So lust is a desire to have something that's prohibited. Greed, on the other hand, is your desire to have something that you're entitled to, but you can't get enough of it. This is what motivates people to gluttony. They love food, and they just can't get enough of it. Or they love money, and they just can't get enough of it. Now, you know, I don't know what Bill Gates is going to do with $37 billion. I mean, if the guy got out there in the morning and started spending it, I don't think he could get the job done. In what's left of his life. He's 40 years old, isn't he? 40, pushing 50. I mean, he's only going to live to be 75 or 80, you know, and you know, that's, you're talking about thousands and thousands of millions of dollars. So I'm not suggesting that Bill Gates is necessarily a greedy man. I don't know the guy personally, and I can't tell you that. But I can tell you that many people are motivated by greed. In fact, all of us are. I'm motivated by greed. And then fear. The fear is the last one. Boy, is that a powerful one. The reason you've got a driver's license is because you fear the consequences of not having it. You're not buying auto insurance because you necessarily want it. You're buying it because you're afraid of the ticket you're going to get when you get caught driving without a license and don't have any insurance. So fear is a very powerful motivator. Now take these five motivators together: vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And boys and girls, the powers that be have applied those five motivators in spades. They've got control of our educational institutions, and they're training us to be professional communists. They train us in the 10 planks. I mentioned this to you last time. See, you go to public school, that's the 10th plank. You pay your income tax, that's the 2nd plank. You got a checking account, that's the 5th plank. You got a social security number, that's the 8th plank. You're divorced from private property, that's the 1st plank. I mean, you know, all of these 10 planks are there. And they're the exact opposite to the 10 commandments, which you have been taught and trained. in your public schools and in your churches that you can't rely upon the Ten Commandments. That's a bad, bad program. So we ban the Bible from public school, and then we ridicule and impugn the Bible in our churches. So with that in mind, we're looking at the New Age versions of this attack against the Scripture. We're talking about an attack that has been made against the Bible. And it's called the New Age Bible versions, which we're going to take up next week, written by a guy by the name of G.A. Riplinger. But before we could get to taking up the New Age versions of the Bible, which is the real subject matter at hand, who in the world has the power to do such a thing? Who can take on God Almighty Himself? I mean, it's like a prophecy in the Bible. Who can make war with the beast? I suspect the United States is the beast power of Revelation, and the nations of the world cannot make power or cannot make war with the United States. Now, in the last program, we were talking about a guy named Cecil Rhodes, and he said that's exactly what he's got in mind. He wants to create a one-world government that no one can make war against. He came up with this program back in the 1890s, Cecil Rhodes, talking about these secret societies. So we're reviewing the book by Len Horowitz, which is the author of the book called Healing Codes for the Biblical Biological Apocalypse. It's called Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse. But the biblical connection in Revelation chapter 6 is absolutely unmistakable. So Len Horowitz is trying to warn you about this, and he came up with a chapter which is called King James, the Bible, and the Secret Societies. So there's an agenda afoot, and these secret societies have it in their minds that they are going to change the Bible. They are going to control what you think. They are going to control your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Hey, you talk about total dominance now. Hey, these guys have a plan. Now, the Rhodes, Cecil Rhodes, Rothschild connection to British intelligence comes into this, and a guy by the name of John Coleman, who is an MI6 spook, an old man now, you know, he's an old guy, and he wrote a book called The Committee of 300 and identifies the names of the people that belong to one of the secret societies. Now, as these people die, new people take their place. And I showed you, you know, a program or two back here where a guy by the name of John Jacob Astor, who died on the Titanic. He was also a buddy with another banker by the name of J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan was a member of the Committee of 300. Now, in modern times, Astor and Morgan have been replaced. But the plan continues on. And people like Bill Clinton and George Bush and Barack Obama, the presidents of the United States, they are parties to this New World Order program. They are very important people who have a part, like Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller and others. I mean, they're not the whole story, but they're important parts of the story. So in the last program, I told you about a guy by the name of Dr. Stanley Monteith, who has a program called Radio Liberty. I think it's in Monterey, California, if I remember right. Monterey, California, or thereabouts. And it's called Radio Liberty. Now, if you'll do a Google search, I think you can tie into him. That guy has forgotten more than I'm ever going to know. So, as my junior reporter status, or in my junior reporter status, I'm just reporting to you where you can go to get the information to prove what I'm telling you. And I don't ask people to believe me because I'm a pathological liar. I just wanted to bring you the information and then say, well, now why don't you go talk to these people that have got the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, and go listen to them. They'll tell you the rest of the story. Don't believe me, believe them. You know, figure it out for yourself, but at the same time, allow me, if I may, to point you in the direction of these three key books. Now, you can get these three books, by the way, from, write this down, bravenewbookstore.com. They're located in Austin, Texas, and their phone number is 512-480-2503. That's 512-480-2503. Now, in case you think I'm hawking books, I'm not. I don't get paid a dime for selling these books. I'm not in the book selling business. There's no money in it. These people that are selling these books, they'll tell you that there's no money in the bookstore. The guy that founded Brave New Bookstore made his money in the stock market. And he said to himself, there's a bunch of ignorance going on out here, and I want to correct that ignorance. And he spent his money on this bookstore, which loses money every year. It has never made a profit, doesn't make money. At least that's the story he tells me. And I was in the book selling business. I've sold books here at the law school, and I can tell you there's no money involved in books. It's a waste of time, and I wouldn't sell you a book. So don't send me any money and tell me to send you a book, because I'm not interested in it. But Brave New Bookstore is. That's bravenewbookstore.com. So when you're trying to find these hard-to-be-gotten books that nobody publishes, they have to be published privately because the powers that be don't allow them, then it's Brave New Bookstore. That's the place to go. All right, now going on here with the Rhodes-Rothschild connection to British intelligence, as American Secretary to the Rhodes Trustees, Frank Adelotti recalled that in 1888, Rhodes made his third will, leaving everything to Lord Rothschild, his mining enterprise financier. Later, for strategic reasons, Lord Rothschild's son-in-law, Lord Rosebery, replaced his elder as Rhodes' final heir. Professor Quigley explained that on behalf of the Rothschild and Rhodes dynasties, the secret society inner structures were shielded by successively larger outer circles. The central part of the structure was established by March of 1891 using Rhodes money. Rothschild trustee Lord Milner directed the organization. It's called the Round Table, that worked behind the scenes at the highest levels of the British government, influencing foreign policy and England's involvement and conduct of World War I and later World War II. Now, according to Van Helsing, the British Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, evolved largely from efforts of members of the Committee of 300 and the Round Table. Other sources reported that the MI6 exercises far greater control in the world than virtually anyone realizes. More wiretaps in the United States, for instance, are administered on behalf of the MI6 than the CIA. Hey, let me pause here for a moment. Let me show you how this game has been played. See, to make Americans feel real good, we bar our CIA from spying on Americans. See how that works? We have laws. You know, our Congress comes up and says, hey, you guys at the CIA, don't you wiretap Americans' telephones. And they don't. What they do is they go over to London and they say, hey, you guys, come on over here and monitor these telephone calls for us so that we can have this information, because it's against the law for us to do that. So MI6 comes over here and they do that. It's not against the law for them to do that. Then the CIA goes over to England. Makes you English people feel real good to know that MI6 can't be monitoring your phone calls and so on. So we have a couple of organizations. We got CIA, and then we've got one called, where they monitor all the wire or wireless communications. They got a name for that, too. And so they share this information back and forth. See how that works? So that none of us have any privacy. Or what privacy we have to work, you know, personally and privately to develop it. So that's the way that game's played. Now, in this regard, Loftus and Ahrens reported that for the last 50 years, virtually every Jewish citizen, organization, and charity in the world has been the victim of electronic surveillance by Great Britain, with the knowing and willing assistance of the intelligence services of the United States. And so everybody's spying on everybody else. The other day, you might have heard a story here about the Russians. You know, they had a bunch of guys over here spying on us. And they were being interviewed, you know, on the Lehrer News Hour. And so the reporter said, well, aren't we doing the same thing in Russia? And this guy says, well, of course we're doing the same thing in Russia. And of course the Jews are, the Mossad is doing the same thing in Washington as the Russians are doing. Everybody is spying on everybody else. So what the hell else is new? Now, to set the stage for the First World War, the Roundtable directors developed the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the RIIA. It was also known as Chatham House, and it had among its members Lords Albert Grey and Arnold Toynbee. The latter was known as the Eminence Greece of the MI6. Webster's dictionary defines Eminence Greece as the Grey Eminence, a nickname of Pierre Joseph Tremblay, 1638 French monk and diplomat and confidant of Cardinal Richelieu, who was known as Eminence Rogue or Red Eminence, and a confidential agent, especially one exercising unsuspected or unofficial power. A related term is called grisail, defined as a decoration in tones of a single color, and especially gray, designed to produce a three-dimensional effect. Now, apparently, the Masonic influence in the affairs of the world's leading intelligence organization has been striking and esoteric. Even the name MI6 reflected knowledge of the ancient mystical arcana, as you will soon see. So, Lord Toynbee of the MI6, who, following brainstorming sessions conducted at the Wellington House into ways to condition the public into accepting World War I, delivered the orders from the Committee of 300. Other famous members of the Committee of 300, past and present, are listed in Figure 3.7. Now, another leading committee member, Lord Rothermere, used his newspapers to test the Wellington House social conditioning strategies following a six-month test period where it was learned that 87% of the public had formed their opinions without using critical or rational judgment, which was the intended result. Now, that's important, and I underlined that for you, because remember these five motivators? Well, young people get excited, and you want to go out and defend America against these bad guys, you know, that knocked down the trade towers, you know. The trade towers were knocked down by the CIA. That's called a black flag operation. And if you want more information about that black flag operation, then you go to Alex Jones, for instance. He's pretty good about this. He has a website, Alex Jones, and it's called Prison Planet. And they spend a prodigious amount of time documenting these kinds of political intrigues that go on around the world. And now we've got a new political intrigue out here. It's called British Petroleum, the BP well out in the Gulf. That's another black flag operation. See, what you're looking at is oil on the water, and you're not seeing the underlying political strategy that's being worked out as a result of that. Knocking down the two buildings in New York didn't have anything to do with Arabs, or with dinking around over here, you know, with Osama bin Laden, who, by the way, is a CIA agent. Osama bin Laden is a CIA agent, just like John Coleman is an MI6 agent. And once you join these secret societies, you're in there forever. We haven't been able to find this guy, Osama bin Laden. And after World War II, we never were able to find Adolf Hitler. We found a burned corpse that was reported to be Adolf Hitler over there. Nobody ever found Adolf Hitler. See, once these guys have served their purpose, you know, then they go into retirement. And you never hear of them again. But there's an agenda being worked out here. So just thought I'd point that out to you. Now, thereafter, the English working class, according to von Helsing, was subjected to sophisticated propaganda methods to convince them that they had to send their sons by the thousands to their deaths in World War I. And hell, you people are doing that today. You're sending your sons and daughters by the thousands over to Iraq and Afghanistan. They're not dying by the thousands now. You know, they're just die a few every day. But these wars now are conducted for geopolitical purposes. Geopolitical purposes. There's an agenda being worked out here. Now, in response, Teddy Roosevelt, the 26th President of the United States, complained during his 1912 election campaign. He said, quote, "Behind the visible government, there is an invisible government upon the throne that owes the people no loyalty and recognizes no responsibility. To destroy this invisible government, to undo the ungodly union between corrupt business and corrupt politics, is the task of a statesman," unquote. Now, I kind of doubt that statement was sincere on the part of Teddy Roosevelt. Remember, Franklin D. Roosevelt, his cousin, Roosevelt came from a very wealthy family. The Roosevelts are kind of like the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds, and they're in this thing right up to their eyebrows. And I suspect that Teddy Roosevelt, when he became president, was a part and parcel to it. Now, sometimes these guys, they get a twinge of conscience, and then they come along and they make statements like this. And I think this is a twinge of conscience. He was a part and parcel with the New World Order. Right at the time that J.P. Morgan and guys like Astor are members of the Committee of 300, and guys like Cecil Rhodes are planning for the takeover of the world. I find it hard to believe that Teddy. We all know that Woodrow Wilson was part and parcel with the program. He's the guy that signed the Federal Reserve into operation. And, you know, come on, these guys are all working together, just like it appears today that Bush's, the Republicans, and Clinton's, the Democrats, you know, are competing forces. They're not. Not at all. In fact, to get Woodrow Wilson elected president, Teddy Roosevelt ran a third-party movement to split the Republican vote. If Roosevelt hadn't done that, Woodrow Wilson could never have been elected president, and Howard Taft wasn't about to vote in the Federal Reserve. So that being the case, they needed to get Woodrow Wilson elected president, so they came to Teddy Roosevelt and said, "Hey, Teddy, here's some money. We'll finance your run for president against Taft." They did. And then they divided the vote three ways. So all you Democrats voted for Woodrow Wilson. And the Republicans split their vote between Roosevelt and Taft. And the net outcome was... All right. So that's called divide and conquer. And that's a very common political program. Now let's take a look at Freemasonry and high finance in America. By the early 1900s, the Masonic-linked secret societies, including the CFR, held a stranglehold on the principal American social, economic, political, and religious institutions. Notice these religious institutions, because it's the churches that are supporting these New Age versions of the Bible. And it's necessary to get control of those religious organizations so that we can teach the preachers, so they control the seminaries. Then you send your kid to the seminary. And then the people that are in the seminary control that preacher's education, his view of the Bible. Which, by the way, most preachers today believe the Bible is a fantasy, it's just a fairy tale. They're educated to be secular. They're educated in evolutionary philosophy, and they subscribe to a combination of evolution and scripture. Then they send you and I to public school, and they teach us sex education in public school. They teach us evolutionary philosophy. They teach us that the Bible isn't true, accurate, and correct. And they teach the preacher the same thing. And so we all look at the Bible as being something that's to be suspected. It's suspicious. Now, in fact, the solidification of Freemason power in America began in 1776, about the same time that Adam Weishaupt was establishing the Order of the Bavarian Illuminati on behalf of the Rothschilds. And according to Van Helsing, the founding of the United States of America was the result of the secret plan carried out by the Freemasons beginning in the 17th century. The American War of Independence had been originally organized by Freemasons. The U.S. Constitution was penned and signed by Freemasons. Almost a third of the American presidents have been Freemasons. The Great Seal of the United States with the pyramid and the all-seeing eye, the bald eagle that replaced the phoenix, the original 13 states, stars and stripes, are all adopted symbols of Freemasonry, though they had been but in place by Weishaupt to convey Rothschild wishes. The symbolism dated back to the Masons of ancient Egypt. The illuminated pyramid on the American dollar bill was a design by Philip Rothschild, as Ayn Rand, his lover, divulged in her book called Atlas Shrugged. All right. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. 273-4967. Well, following the Revolutionary War, the American Masonic Lodges split from the Mother Grand Lodge of England and formed the American Grand Lodge. This composed the New York Rite with 10 degrees, the 10th is the Templar degree, and the Scottish Rite with 33 degrees. Although early American political leaders like Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson heavily favored private centralized banking, in 1790, Alexander Hamilton was appointed Secretary of the Treasury and reformed policy, heavily favoring his silent benefactors, Mayor Amschel Rothschild and his sons. A year later, Hamilton established the first National Bank of the United States, fashioned after the Bank of England, and it was controlled by the Rothschilds. After Mayor Rothschild's death in 1812, Nathan took control over the family fortune, and he opened the Nathan Mayer Rothschild and Sons Bank in London, Vienna, Paris, and Berlin. In America, it was represented by J.P. Morgan & Company, August Belmont & Company, and Kuhn Loeb & Company. Now, during the American Civil War, the Rothschilds financed both sides of the conflict. The reasons leading to this civil war, Van Hessling wrote, were almost completely due to the actions and provocations of the Rothschild agents. One of the troublemakers, the founder of the Knights of the Golden Circle, was a man named George Bickley. Bickley extolled the advantages of secession from the Union by the Confederate States. Then, on the other side, the Rothschild, J.P. Morgan, and August Belmont banks financed the Union. In addition, Rothschild's London bank supported the North, while its Paris bank funded the South. It was a glorious business. President Lincoln finally caught wind of the scam, and he withheld immense interest payments to the Rothschilds. He then petitioned Congress to print greenbacks and finance the Union side by making dollars or creating dollars based upon our Constitution, dollars over which only the Union held printing power. In response, the furious Rothschilds arranged for his assassination. Lincoln was murdered by John Wilkes Booth on April 14, 1865. Booth was freed from jail due to his efforts of the Knights, that is the Knights of the Golden Circle, and he spent the duration of his days living comfortably in England, funded by the Rothschilds. Now remember, it was reported that John Wilkes Booth was himself killed. Remember that? Never went to trial. Just disappeared. And it was reported he was killed. Now watch this. The book called Morals and Dogma was written by a Southern Confederate general. When Union soldiers were captured by the South, or when Southern soldiers were captured in the North, if they were Masons, they were treated totally different than the ordinary Joe Sixpacks. Now, keep in mind now that John Wilkes Booth was a Mason who was sent by the Rothschilds to assassinate Lincoln because of his monetary policy over the greenbacks. And as a result of that, the Masons take care of their own. You can rest assured that the Masons take care of their own. It's a part and parcel with the secret societies. Now, in 1913, American banking mogul William Averill Harriman was initiated into the Skull and Bones fraternity. During the Roaring Twenties, Harriman became the chief Western financier of the Russian government and their Ruskom Bank, where Max May, a Skull and Bones brother of Harriman, was vice president. May was simultaneously vice president of the Guaranty Trust Company controlled by J.P. Morgan and, by extension, the Nathan Mayer Rothschild Bank. Other Skull and Bones members partnered with J.P. Morgan at the same time, including Harold Stanley and Thomas Cochran. The capital used to create the Guaranty Trust came from the Harrimans, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, and the Whitneys, all families with blood kin in Skull and Bones. Percy Rockefeller represented his family's interest in Skull and Bones as well as Guaranty Trust, which he directed from 1915 to 1930. Rothschild and Bavarian Illuminati representatives helped establish the Rockefeller European Standard Oil Empire, as well as Carnegie Steel Works and Harriman's Railroads. The introduction of the Federal Reserve System in 1913 enabled the international bankers to consolidate their American financial power. Banking chiefs, who were largely supported by the Rothschilds, became the chairman of the first Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Following passage of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, Paul Warburg led the Fed and the U.S. Congress to pass the 16th Amendment to the Constitution and granted Congress the power to levy personal income taxes on American citizens. This legislation was required since the United States government could no longer print money to finance its operations due to the controlling forces of the international banking cartel. Opposition to these fiscal policies came, but was grossly inadequate to quell the changing tide. U.S. Congressman Lewis McFadden expressed the sentiments of too few when he decried, "We have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Bank Board and the Federal Reserve Bank, hereinafter called the Fed. They're not government institutions. They are private monopolies which prey upon the people of these United States for the benefit of themselves and for their foreign customers. All right, now let's go back and let's think about this for a second, because we've just been through this. Back in 1836, President Andrew Jackson refused to renew the charter. He vetoed the charter of the U.S. National Bank, passed by Congress. Congress is bought and paid for by the bankers. That's the way these people get reelected. It's through their campaign contributions. And so when I ask students when they come to school, how much money do you give to your political parties and political candidates? I'm yet to see anybody raise his hand beyond signing or checking off that $1 contribution on their tax returns. Listen, the insurance companies and the banks give millions of dollars to those politicians for their reelection campaigns. Once in a while, we get a president who will veto the bankers. Then when that happens, they get assassinated, such as Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. Now, the banking power is very powerful, and it's worth a lot of money. And the last thing we can afford here in the banking world is to have some president come along here and screw up the money machine. Now, we just had a massive bank bailout. It totaled $29 trillion. You know, most people are looking at a trillion or $750 billion. That was chump change. The real number is $29.1 trillion. It not only it covered cash, it also covered guarantees and stock purchases and guarantees like the bailout of AIG, which at the present time is about a... It's pushing $200 billion and will total a trillion before it's finished. And then there are guarantees on all these loans of all this bad paper that the American taxpayer has taken on as surety. Now, do you remember what God told you in the Bible about going surety, boys and girls? Read about it. Six places in the book of Proverbs. Surety. S-U-R-E-T-Y. Surety. Don't do that. And so they've got us all guaranteeing these bankers' bailouts. Well, Andrew Jackson put the kibosh to him, and a guy came up and tried to assassinate him. It didn't go off, and it didn't happen. Now, going on, the bank bailout recently could have been affected this way. If you'd have taken the same $29 trillion and gone out and bought up all the mortgages in America, which total about $13 trillion, you could have bought them twice over. For half as much money, our government could have bought all the mortgages and paid all the mortgages of Americans off, and everybody in America would have a house free and clear. Oh yeah, we'd still owe the same $13 trillion. But hell, the way it came out, you gave $29 trillion to the bankers, which was twice as much money, and the bankers still own the mortgages on your house, and they're foreclosing on them and taking them away from you. And wasn't the reason that we needed the bank bailout is because the Americans and the real estate market had collapsed? And the banks, didn't they tell us that if you don't bail us out, we won't be able to make loans and America will collapse? All right, so we bailed them out, paid twice as much money, and they're still not loaning us any money, are they? I mean, come on, guys, isn't it time that we woke up and smell the coffee here? I mean, we're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. Now, you owe the mortgage on your house and the $29 trillion. Wouldn't you have been better off if you wanted to borrow the money, pay off the mortgages, and let the banks have the $13 trillion, which is what they were complaining about, that they were about to lose because you guys couldn't pay your mortgages? At least then you'd have your houses free and clear and one half as much debt. Now you got twice as much debt plus the debt on your houses, plus the fact that they won't lend you a dime anyway. Now, the reason behind that is to collapse the American economy and put you into the New World Order. And you people will line up to get your mark of the beast, which now, remember, your God told you not to do. But you'll line up. And that's because now they've got total control over you. They've got control of your houses. They got you buried in debt. You can't ever get out. They have all of your consumer debt and your credit card debt. And then they control your company that you work for. Got that? And they control your government. Now, you just tell me what they don't control. And then when they tell you to line up and get your mark, and then we'll roll your mortgage over, and we'll let you keep your job. All right, now going on with no apologies, the personal and political memoirs of U.S. Senator Barry Goldwater. Expressed the insider's view that the roundtable's cover organization, the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, tightly controlled the American political scene with the Rockefellers at the helm. Goldwater said, "I believe the Council on Foreign Relations and its ancillary elitist groups, referring to the other secret societies, such as Skull and Bones, are indifferent to communism. They have no ideological anchors. In their pursuit of a new world order, they are prepared to deal without prejudice, with a communist state and socialist state, a democratic state, monarchy, oligarchy. It's all the same to them." Rear Admiral Chester Ward of the U.S. Navy, a 16-year veteran of the CFR, warned, "The most powerful clique in these elitist groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty and the national independence of the United States." Now, that's what Barack Obama's task is, and that's what he's doing. That's what his handlers require of him, and that's what he's going to perform. So make up your mind to it. Now, their rationale rests exclusively on materialism. Senator Goldwater continued, "When a new president comes on board, there is a great turnover in personnel, but no change in policy. Example, during the Nixon years, Henry Kissinger, CFR member, and Nelson Rockefeller's protege, was in charge of foreign policy. But when Jimmy Carter was elected, Kissinger was replaced with Zbigniew Brzezinski, CFR member, and David Rockefeller protege. On February 18, 1991, President George Bush passed CIA Director, former CFR Chief, and a member of Skull and Bones Committee of 300 and its offshoot, the Bilderbergers, addressed the American people during his State of the Union address. He said, "It is big," he said, "a new world order where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause. Only the United States has both the moral standing and the means to back it up." Now, we come to the protocols of the learned elders of Sion, S-I-O-N. On a final note, some authors have alleged that at least part of the most infamous anti-Semitic document in history, called the Protocols of the Learned Elders, discussed in greater detail in the next chapter, were reworked during a meeting led in 1773 by Mayor Rothschild, a non-Hebrew Khazar Jew. Bagent et al. Provided a harsh reality check regarding the Masonic, not Jewish, origin of these infamous protocols. Originally a secret document that heralded a deadly totalitarian plot for herding the masses into a new world order run by financial elitists, the document had been turned into an anti-Semitic propaganda piece during the Russian Revolution. By 1919, the protocols were also being circulated by Alfred Rosenberg, who later became the chief racial theoretician and propagandist for the National Socialist Party in Germany. The document was said to have advanced convincing proof of the international Jewish conspiracy. Hitler referred to it in Mein Kampf with vicious conviction as to the document's authenticity. Today, experts generally view the protocols as an insidious forgery. However, following extensive research, Holy Blood, Holy Grail authors concluded otherwise. The following excerpts relay their discovery that the protocols, likely the world's most famous document, was a Masonic strategy brief. Now, one of the most pervasive testimonials that we found to the existence and activities of the Priori di Sion dated from the late 19th century. There were influential, even powerful esoteric enclaves at the Russian court long before Rasputin. During the 1890s and early 1900s, one such enclave formed itself around an individual known as Monsieur Philippe and around his mentor, who made periodic visits to the imperial court at Petersburg, the man called Pappus, P-A-P-U-S, the French esotericist associated with Jules Dunyel, founder of the Neo-Cathar Church in the Ludenic Palladian, who claimed to have discovered Jesus' tomb. Emma Calvé and Claude Debussy, in a word, the French occult revival of the late 19th century, had not only spread to Petersburg, its representatives also enjoyed the privileged status of personal confidants to the Tsar and the Tsarina. So the protocols propound in outline a blueprint for nothing less than total world domination. On first reading, they would seem to be the Machiavellian program, a kind of inter-office memo, so to speak, for a group of individuals determined to impose a new world order with themselves as supreme despots. The text advocates a many-tentacled, hydra-headed conspiracy dedicated to disorder and anarchy, to toppling certain existing regimes, infiltrating Masonry and other such organizations, and eventually seizing absolute control of the Western world's social, political, and economic institutions. And the anonymous authors of the protocols declare explicitly that they have stage managed whole peoples according to a political plan, which no one has so much as guessed is in the course of many centuries in its operation. So Bagent continued, when they were first publicized, however, the protocols were alleged to have been composed at an international Judaic Congress that convened in Basel, Switzerland in 1897. This allegation has long since been disproved. Moreover, a copy of the protocols is known to have been in circulation as early as 1884, a full 13 years before the Basel Congress allegedly met. The 1884 copy of the protocols surfaced in the hands of a member of a Masonic lodge, the same lodge of which Pappas was a member and subsequently Grand Master. Moreover, it was in this same lodge that the tradition of Ormus had first appeared, the legendary Egyptian sage who amalgamated pagan and Christian mysteries and founded the Rose Croix. Modern scholars have established that the protocols in their published form are based at least in part on a satirical work written and printed in Geneva, Switzerland in at least 1864, and the work was composed as an attack on Napoleon III by a man named Maurice Joly, who was subsequently imprisoned. Joly is said to have been a member of Rose Croix, the order. Whether this is true or not, he was a friend of Victor Hugo, and Hugo, who shared Joly's antipathy to Napoleon III, was a member of the Rose Croix order and the Grand Master of the PDS. Now, these PDS investigators concluded that no anti-Semitic forger, not even a modicum of intelligence, would possibly have concocted such references in order to discredit Judaism. The text of the protocols ends with a single statement, signed by the representatives of Sion of the 33rd degree, as discussed previously and seen in Figure 3.3, a diagram, the structure of Freemasonry, that was published in a 1956 issue of Life magazine, the significant numerical designation of the 33rd degree in Freemasonry is the so-called strict observance. Thus, if anything, the protocols would seem to refer to something that is specifically Masonic. The protocols contained numerous cryptic statements that Bagent and his colleagues felt smacked of Masonic influence. For example, the text repeatedly hailed the birth of a Masonic kingdom and king of the blood of Sion who would rule over this domain. Not only was this reminiscent of Grail history, but several Masonic orders included the word Sion, S-I-O-N, in their titles. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.